This is the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. Read in Krishna book and also 10th canto Srimad Bhagavatam about the deliverance of Nalakuvera and Manigriva, who were cursed to stand as trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. From where I'm seated, maybe not from where you're seated, but right over there is the dome of a temple that we're not going to go to because they're so aggressive over there, but that's the temple of Nanda Maharaj, and this is the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. It must have been a big palace that he lived in. Because as you're going out behind that, or within that white structure there, is what the local Vaishnavas say is the part of the mortar, a broken piece of the mortar, the grinding stone that Damodar was tied to. And before I forget, our host here made this little request. Any donations you want to give, don't give to individuals, but put in the hundi box at the temple door over there, so they don't have any issue about what happens. Otherwise, they'll have an issue about what happens. It's a delicate thing here. The childhood pastimes of Krishna are revered by everyone because of their sweetness and innocence. No one has the same kind of confusion about Krishna's Kishore pastimes, Radha and Krishna, conjugal loving relations. Some people have not such a good understanding of that issue. But the simplicity and the innocence of Krishna's childhood pastimes are adored by everyone. And this pastime is so prominent in our Vaishnava teachings and ways, practices, that a whole month of the month of Damodar that just passed is dedicated to this Damodar Leela. Such an important Leela. For many reasons. Perhaps one of the less appreciated or regularly appreciated reasons, but very important reason for this pastime being so wonderful, is such apparently opposite manifestations of Krishna's character of Bhakta Vatsala. It's one of Krishna's names. Is Bhakta Vatsala. He's very kind and affectionate to his devotee. So he's kind and affectionate to Mother Jasoda, but he's also kind and affectionate to Narada Muni. Because Narada Muni made a promise, and Krishna upheld that promise because Krishna upholds the words of his devotees. Just like we know, Prabhupada would ask this question, why didn't Krishna simply say, my devotee is never vanquished? Instead, he wanted Arjuna to say it. Because when Arjuna says it, Krishna will uphold it. If Krishna says it, there may be something else that's conflicting with what Krishna says, and Krishna may uphold what his devotee says before what he says. You follow? You don't follow? I'll say it slowly. I'll give an example. Grandfather Bhishma. Krishna took a vow before the Kurukshetra battle. I shall not fight. I can be on one side, my armies can be on the other side, but I will not fight. So Krishna speaks, and Krishna upholds his own word. Except when his own devotee, Arjuna, is put into difficulty, Krishna broke his own word in order to protect his devotee, because he's Bhaktavatsala. Knowing that nature of Krishna, Bhishma Dev, who never breaks his vow, and Krishna broke Bhishma's vow, Bhishma took another vow that either Krishna breaks his vow or I will kill Arjuna. So we'll go back. Bhishma took a vow. I'll not marry. And I'll not become king. So even at the risk of having to fight Parashuram, his guru, who gave him all the skills in fighting, Bhishma fought Parashuram because he wouldn't break his own word. Parashuram told Bhishma, "You marry Amba or fight me?" And Bhishma said, "Then I'll fight you, because I've taken a vow. I'll not marry. And you're asking me to go against my own vow. That's not an instruction that I should follow, to break my vow. So it's not wrong for me to go against your instruction to marry her, because I can't break my vow. So we'll fight." Bhishma was such a powerful fighter, even Parashuram couldn't defeat him. Right? For days they fought, and Parashuram couldn't defeat Bhishma. Parashuram put down his weapons. Bhishma put down his weapons. Bhishma would not break his vow. So later, Duryodhana came to the tent of Bhishma and said, "You're not fighting full strength because you have affection for the Pandavas, I know. But you're our general. You're our chief leading general. You're the commander-in-chief. You need to fight with such vigor that you will destroy the Pandavas." Bhishma said, "All right, I take a vow. And you know I never break my vow. Here are 5 arrows. You keep these arrows. Tomorrow morning, you give me these 5 arrows, and with these 5 arrows, tomorrow during the battle, I will destroy the 5 Pandavas with these 5 arrows. Krishna broke Bhishma's vow. How did he do that? He sent Arjuna. Go to the tent of Bhishma, to the tent of Duryodhana. Remind him of a promise he made long ago. When you saved him in a time of great difficulty, he promised anything, Arjuna, that you want. And you said, no, no, no. Maybe later. Now is when you should use that promise that Duryodhana gave. Ask him for 5 arrows. He'll know what you mean. You don't need to know what I mean. Just ask him for those 5 arrows that Bhishma Dev gave you. That's all you have to ask him. So Arjuna, being fully surrendered to Krishna, went to Duryodhana's tent, and Duryodhana received him like a brother. Well, like a cousin at least. "Oh, Arjuna, how nice to see you. There must be something on your mind, whatever it is. Please ask." "Duryodhana, remember that promise you gave?" "Yes, I remember that promise I gave." "What would you like? The kingdom?" "The kingdom is yours." "No, no, I don't want the kingdom. Just those 5 arrows, please. Please give me those 5 arrows. "Very well. Here's the 5 arrows. Bhishma's not going to be happy, but here's the 5 arrows. The next morning, Duryodhana was to give the 5 arrows to Bhishma, and he had to report to Bhishma Arjuna asked me for those 5 arrows. I don't have them anymore. Right? Bhishma understood. This is Krishna's trickery. Krishna has made me break my vow. I, who never break my vow, have been forced to break my vow. I will force Krishna to break his vow. Krishna will fight on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, or I will kill his best friend Arjuna before the end of the battle day. I take that vow. Ooh, Duryodhan was very happy. Because Krishna doesn't break his vow. But Krishna broke his vow to uphold Bhishma's vow and to protect Arjuna. Krishna places the words of his own devotee above his own. That's Krishna. So Krishna said to Arjuna, Arjuna, you declare it. My devotee is never vanquished, because when you declare it, that's it. That will be upheld, because you've declared it. Same in this Damodar Leela. Narada Muni declared something. He told Nala Kuvera and Maligriva that they will be cursed to become trees. But he gave a promise that you'll be delivered by Krishna. It's such a nice part, I'll back up. Narada Muni was going to visit his dear friend, one of his dear friends, Kuvera and Lord Shiva, because Mount Kailash was, for some period of time, not permanently, Kuvera was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. He was such a great devotee of Lord Shiva that he offered to Lord Shiva residence in his the most favored part of his kingdom, his very special garden. Very special garden. So, Lord Shiva accepted. Mount Kailash was part of the kingdom of Kuvera. Treasure of heaven. Imagine how opulent his garden was. That was the residence of Lord Shiva. So, Narada was going to visit Lord Shiva. As he was going to visit Lord Shiva, in the river flowing through Mount Kailash were the two sons of Kuvera, along with many damsels of the heavenly planets in a very embarrassing state, an unclothed, intoxicated state. And when Narada came, you know the Leela, Narada came and the ladies were very embarrassed. They covered themselves immediately. But Nala Kuvera and Manigriva were so intoxicated, not only with intoxication, but intoxicated with pride. They didn't even have the shame to cover their naked bodies. They stood naked standing before Narada Muni. And Narada Muni was appalled, not offended. He didn't feel, it was offense to Narada, but he didn't feel offended. He felt, how unfortunate the condition of these two very opulent young men. They don't even have the decency, the common sense to cover themselves. So what did Narada do? Very instructive. Narada started thinking, this is what devotees should do when someone offends you. I don't know if you've ever been offended in your life, maybe not. But if it ever happens in the future, follow the example of Narada. Narada started thinking, what is the welfare of these two? What's the best thing that could happen for these two? Immediately. And then his thought process, If you could read the mind of a pure devotee, wouldn't that be nice? This is a section of the Bhagavatam where the inner thoughts and contemplations of a pure devotee, when offended, is processed. Very, very confidential. So Narada Muni was thinking, what will be best for them? Why has this degrading situation come upon them? The reason is pride. And pride is there because of their opulence. So good instruction to someone who is very proud isn't going to work at all. That it will inflame their pride. Their pride is so extreme. So good instruction won't work. The best thing is that their pride can be removed. He gives the example that when a person becomes very proud, they can become very vicious and hurtful and not even think anything about it because of their pride, their condition of pride. Prabhupada speaks even of animal slaughter. They can kill animals and think nothing of it because of their pride. Hurt other people in abusive ways and not think anything of it because of being dulled by their own pride. But the opposite is there. When someone has nothing, he gives the example of one who has been pricked by a thorn. When we were doing Govardhan Prakrama, I hope it doesn't happen, but it might happen. If you're walking barefoot around Govardhan, sometimes you get a thorn in your foot. I've had that happen. Especially if you go on the inner trail, you can easily get thorns in your feet. So Narada's considering, one who has been pricked by a thorn, when he sees another undergoing the same pain of being pricked by a thorn, naturally he feels empathy for that other person who has been pricked by a thorn. He knows their pain, and he feels empathy for their pain. It would be very good for Nalakovera and Manigriva to be deprived of their opulence for a long time. Very long time. Not forever, but a very long time. So that pride is gone. And when pride is gone from the heart, then they can be a recipient of bhakti. That's the best plan. Now, to remove them of their opulence is very easy. Now, and they want to stand naked, let them stand naked. Trees stand naked for thousands of years. They stand naked, shameless. Let them become trees. Stand naked for thousands of years. It wasn't like hurtful. It wasn't, whoa, they've offended me. I'll show them. I'm Narada Muni. I'm going to fix their attitude. That wasn't his thinking. It was how to elevate, effectively elevate. We're not Narada Muni. We don't have such capacity to do what he did. But we do have the capacity to think, what will elevate? How can I be of service to help bring up the situation of this other person? So that's what he did. But within that curse, there was a benediction. The benediction was, you take birth as trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, so you'll get Krishna's association. And not only that, Krishna will deliver you. And when Krishna delivers you, not only you'll be freed from pride, and you can return to your position as the sons of Kuvera in the heavenly kingdom, but you'll be pure devotees. That's a good plan. Bring them to the position of pure devotion voluntarily. So he cursed them to become trees. And I've heard this part of the description from Dean Abundu. I'm not an expert about trees. But he said there's a special quality about Arjun trees. It's, now in America, there are hardwood trees and there are soft trees. Like pine is soft. And oak is very hard. So Arjun trees are very hard. And their roots go very deep. And to uproot an Arjun tree is like impossible. But that's what Krishna did. The impossible. Arjuna trees. So the stage was set for the deliverance of Nalakovera and Manigriva. But before that, Krishna had some bhakta-vatsala exchange to engage in with Mother Jasoda. So, Mother Jasoda, right here, where we are, in the courtyard, she was churning butter for Krishna. The details of the Leela was that it was on Diwali. And because it was Diwali, she gave all of her servants the day off. She said to herself, I've been getting these reports that Krishna's stealing butter. Why would Krishna steal butter? Nanda Maharaja's storerooms has so much butter. And it's the best butter, because it's the best cows. These maidservants, they must not know how to make butter properly. I'll make it myself. And she took, so she said, you can take the day off. I'll make the butter today. Go to your families and have a nice Diwali. Haribol. Jiva Goswami describes, of the 900,000 cows of Nanda Maharaj, there were 1,000 special cows, and they took the milk from the 1,000 special cows and fed it to 100 very special cows. And they took the milk from the 100 very special cows and fed it to 10 very, very special cows, and fed that milk from the 10 very, very special cows. And it's, oh, by the way, in special grasses. Mother Jasoda was accurate. She knew which grasses with which cows would produce which flavor milk. And that grass with those cows would make another flavor of milk. So she blended the flavors so it would just be the best milk. And then of the 5 best cows, she took that milk and began churning butter from the yogurt from those cows. And as she was churning the churning rod, you've seen how those churning rods go, and there's little paddles in the bottom of the pail or bucket. And the rope goes around the top, and there's a thing that keeps the pole going up and down. And she was moving the rope back and forth. As she was moving the rope back and forth, she had metal bangles on her wrists that as she was moving, it was making sounds like cartels. Ching, 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 ching. And the paddle was moving, so it was like a mridanga. Boom, 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 ching, ching, boom, boom. And she was singing songs spontaneously. She didn't have a song book. She hadn't memorized the latest bhajan. She's on the platform of spontaneous devotion, just singing praises of Krishna as she had directly experienced. Her love for Krishna was being poured out in the form of her wonderful ching ching boom boom kirtan. So there's Mother Jasoda, right here, churning butter for Krishna in ecstatic devotion. And Krishna had a different desire than her churning butter for him. He wanted her breast milk. So little toddler Krishna came and tugged at Mother Jasoda's sari. So somehow mothers know what little children want. I don't know how they know, but they've got a radar system or something. She knew immediately Krishna wanted to be fed. So the Bhagavatam describes that she placed Krishna on her lap with her legs to the floor. She dropped the rope, placed Krishna with his little legs straddling hers, and held Krishna by the back and looked Krishna straight in the face, directly eye to eye. And when mothers gaze upon the smiling, happy faces of their little children, how much happiness does it bring to the mother? And elevate that to the transcendental platform of the love of Mother Jasoda looking directly into the eyes of little Lord Krishna. What happiness Mother Jasoda was experiencing. And she began breastfeeding Krishna. Meanwhile, over on the stove, she saw that the milk that was on the stove started to boil over. Jiva Goswami comments that it was not because the flame became too hot and the milk was starting to boil over, but rather, in the spiritual world, everything is conscious. And the milk was thinking, oh, what is the use of my life? The happiness that Mother Jasoda is experiencing feeding Krishna, and the happiness that Krishna is having experiencing the love of Mother Jasoda as she's directly feeding his own breast milk, this could go on forever. Mother Jasoda may never stop feeding Krishna. What is the use of my life? I'm jumping over the pot into the fire, giving up my life. Jiva Goswami describes like that. Now Mother Jasoda had a dilemma that we sometimes, in a different level, but the dilemma of, should I do this service or should I do that service? And both are important services, and you can't simultaneously do both services. The milk is boiling over, and Krishna wants to be fed. What to do? She made a choice based upon her anuman, her reasoning faculty. She reasoned, if I put Krishna down and go and save the milk, then the milk will still be okay and can go back and feed Krishna, and Krishna can be fed. So I can do both things in sequence. First this, then that. Very logical. Whereas, if I just continue feeding Krishna, the milk will boil over and that will be spoiled, and so that will be wasted. So let me do this one. So she went to the stove to rescue the milk that was boiling over. And there's a comment that's made by our acharyas that what she did was she sprinkled water over the top of the pot. Now, what do you do when something is starting to boil over? I know what I do. I just panic. I don't know what to do. But a simple thing is you put a little water on the top of the pot and the temperature of wood once goes down and the boiling over stops. So Mother Jasoda did that. She quickly took some water and sprinkled the water on the top of the boiling milk and it subsided. Jiva Goswami's commentary says, it's not because Mother Jasoda sprinkled water on the pot of milk. Rather, the milk, being conscious, started to think, oh, first my life is useless, and now I've offended Mother Jasoda. She's a pure devotee of the Lord, and I've given Mother Jasoda trouble. I should get back in the pot. So everything was nice. Mother Jasoda rescued the milk. That part was nice, but Krishna was not happy. Because Krishna wanted that Mother Jasoda should feed me, and that means now. Anybody with children know, children don't generally have a lot of patience. If they want something, it's not later, it's now. Now! Now! They'll make sure that you know it's, right? Now! So Krishna became angry. And he took a stone and forcefully threw the stone and broke the pot that was for churning butter for him. And the butter leaked all over the ground. But that wasn't enough for Krishna. He was up to some more mischief. So he went to the storeroom to get more butter and began eating the butter. But to get to the butter, he had to put the mortar, because it was up on the rafters hanging, so he put the grinding stone for churning spices and stepped on top of that in order to reach the milk up in the rafters. Mother Jasoda came back. And she's a pure devotee. But it's not that being a pure devotee means you know everything. Prabhupada made that clear. Krishna knows everything. He's super soul. He's omniscient. A pure devotee is not omniscient. But a pure devotee is a very dear servant of Krishna, and they use what resources Krishna gives them in Krishna's service. So again, Mother Jasoda called upon her reasoning faculty. A, broken pot. B, Krishna's angry. C, Krishna's capable of any kind of mischief. Therefore, Krishna must have done it. She didn't see Krishna do it. She didn't know for sure that Krishna did it. But she concluded, by reasoning process, Krishna did it. And then, she wanted to find Krishna to punish him. So, she saw the little footprints of butter, because Krishna's feet had been gone into the butter, and just followed the footprints. Sherlock Holmes, she just watched step by step the direction that Krishna went, and sure enough, it was right for the storeroom. So when she came into the storeroom, she had picked up a stick, little stick, not like these big ones for keeping away the monkeys and other creatures. Little stick. And that was a system at the time. Prabhupada described that system in our Gurukula. Just like sometimes when people scold, they hold their finger in the air like this. No. That's the stick. It's a replacement for the stick. It's just your finger. It doesn't hurt anybody. And a little skinny stick isn't going to hurt anybody either. Prabhupada's teaching in disciplining children is never use the stick. Never even hold the stick unless the child, the person, the student, or the dependent understands there's love. And when their connection with love is there, then Prabhupada said, then you could show a stick. Otherwise, don't even show a stick. Don't show disciplinary, heavy, even when it seems the situation is called for, if the relationship is not clearly a relationship that's where the receiving party understands the basis is love. the relationship between the two persons is love. Then one can exercise discipline. So Mother Yashoda came into the storeroom, saw Krishna stealing butter. "Ah, Krishna, you're stealing butter!" And Krishna saw Mother Yashoda out of the corner of his eye, and he ran quickly in fear of the stick in Mother Yashoda's hand. And she was running after him. And it was difficult for her to catch Krishna, even though he was very small. Krishna was very swift. As she was running, the hair, the flowers that were in her hair fell to the ground. Jiva Goswami again comments, "Some of the flowers that fell from the hair of Mother Yashoda were thinking, we're extra weight. We should lighten the burden of Mother Yashoda so that she can fulfill her wish to catch Krishna." And there were some other flowers that said, "This is now our chance. If we touch the ground, Mother Yashoda will step on us and we'll get the benediction of the lotus feet of Mother Yashoda." So the flowers fell from Mother Yashoda's hair to the ground. And somehow, means by Yogamaya's influence, Krishna allowed Mother Yashoda to catch Krishna. And you know what happened. Krishna cried and cried. And Mother Yashoda could understand. He was very afraid of the stick, so she threw away the stick. And she said, "I can forgive you for breaking the pot, because Nanda has so much milk. But stealing is not something that can be forgiven. If you grow up and continue stealing, anything could happen. It'll be terrible for you and terrible for everyone. I must punish you for stealing." So she tried to tie him to the grinding mortar. She said, you're both accomplices. You were stealing and the mortar was helping you. So he should be punished too. I'll tie you to him. You can't go anywhere." But she couldn't tie him. The rope was 2 inches too short. You know the story. So she got some more rope. She used her deductive processes for the third time. "Aha, more rope than I can go around Krishna's waist." So she got some more rope. But as she tied the ropes together, it was still 2 inches too short. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary, Krishna exhibited two of his transcendental potencies. His Svarup Shakti, that is, and Aishvarya Shakti, his opulence that, like Mother Yashoda seeing inside Krishna's mouth, his opulence was, no rope can go around Krishna. Although he's a small boy, when Krishna exhibits his potency of opulence, who can surpass him? Nobody can surpass him. So the rope wouldn't go around. And it was his own will. He wanted more butter. He didn't want Mother Yashoda to bind him. He wanted to go get more butter. So his own will surpassed the will of Mother Yashoda. He was exhibiting these two potencies. She was defeated. But she wasn't defeated because she was a devotee. And she kept, even against odds, she continued to strive, like we sometimes need to do. We need to know when to continue striving and when to relent. But she was moved by this spirit. It's my duty as a mother. I must discipline him. By now some other ladies came and they saw the whole situation. She said, "Get some more rope." I said, what good is it going to get some more rope? Don't you understand? It's not meant to be. Just this morning, you tied a little string around Krishna's waist. No difficulty. A little pearl on the end of that string. And it went around his waist very easily, and now it's not going around his waist, and so don't you understand? It's just not meant to be. Just accept it. And Mother Jasoda said, no, no. I must. It's my duty. Seeing the strong, pure desire of Mother Jasoda, Krishna withdrew those two potencies and he exhibited his mercy potency. Kripa Shakti. Very important. Nothing can happen without Krishna's mercy. Even ordinary things can't happen without Krishna's mercy. What to speak of something that's difficult and challenging and just somehow not working out? But when Krishna exhibits his mercy, then anything becomes possible. Even the impossible becomes possible by the mercy of Krishna. Very important lesson in this whole Damodar Leela. Because we also have services to do. Have you ever been asked to do something that when you think about doing that something, you reach for your head and say, how is it possible? How am I going to do that? I'm very familiar with that territory. But Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. No such thing. If Krishna wants, anything is possible. If you're very clear that Krishna wants, then it's possible. Like controlling the mind. Try that one. Impossible. Possible. Because Krishna says to do it. It's something Krishna wants. It's possible. And so many other things. The chanting of the holy name should be heard in every town and village in the whole world. Impossible. Not impossible. With Krishna's Kripa Shakti, anything becomes possible. Anything becomes possible. Entering into Vrindavan Dham becomes possible. How many of us, if somebody said some years ago, guess what? I see it in your chart, you're going to be in Vrindavan. Just after the month of Kartik. With hundreds of devotees. Purifying your heart as much as... Anyway, so... No. No. Some of us would have said, where's Vrindavan? Never heard of the place. So, very important lesson. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, these two fingers too short signify the effort of the devotee and the mercy of Krishna. Don't just wait for Krishna's mercy. And don't just make effort without depending upon Krishna's mercy. Both are required for success in anything in spiritual life. We make endeavor and we're dependent upon Krishna's mercy. And Mother Jasoda has the capacity to bind Krishna because she has pure devotion and Krishna reciprocates. Even he wants something else. Bhakta Vatsala. The desire of my pure devotee is more important than my own desire. I subordinate my desire to my pure devotee's desire. That's Krishna. That's our master's nature. We're not pure devotees, but that's Krishna's nature. And if our devotion becomes pure, it's not that, aha, I can get Krishna to do what I want. But it's we can enter into such intimacy of loving dealings that our desire is what Krishna's desire is, and it comes to pass because Krishna makes it happen. That's what we should be striving for, and in a place like this, be praying for. So Mother Jasoda bound Krishna, and she resumed her household duties. The last part of the Leela is the deliverance of Nalakuvira and Manigriva. Krishna, previously being in the Leela and the bhava of a dependent upon the love of Mother Jasoda, became the supreme independent, just like that. And he thought, okay, Narada made a promise, and I uphold the promises of my devotees, so now I should deliver Nalakuvira and Manigriva. This is a good time to do it. There they are, these two Arjuna trees. And there's this nice apparatus for knocking over the trees. This mortar for grinding spices. So Krishna, on hands and knees, crawled in between the two trees. The mortar was sideways and knocked over the two trees. Can you knock over one tree like that? A little baby tree, maybe? Not two mature trees, Arjuna trees that have been there for thousands of years. Can't do it. But Krishna can do it. Because he's all powerful. And from those two trees came Nalakuvira and Manigriva. Now, free from pride, by the mercy of Narada, and by the benediction of Narada, purified by the contact with Krishna. Now they're pure devotees, offering their prayers to Krishna. Little boy. They're, you know, demigods, offering their prayers to a little boy, but understanding he's the personality, he's not just a little boy. He's the personality of Godhead. Beautiful prayers. Krishna remained silent after hearing their prayers. They circumambulated him three times and returned to their previous position as the sons of Kuvera. Because time on earth and time in demigod time is different. Their absence from the higher realm of heaven was very short time compared to the long duration of time, relatively, they spent here as trees. So it all worked out very nicely. But now when they return, they're pure devotees. They're not just sons of Kuvera who are enamored with the extreme wealth of their father and the dearness that Lord Shiva has to Kuvera, their father. They're pure devotees. Those things don't mean anything of transcendental substance to a pure devotee. By the mercy of Narada, they were delivered to that position. Meanwhile, when the two trees came crashing in the courtyard, Mother Jasoda heard the crash, Nanda Maharaj heard the crash, and they asked all the children that were around, what happened? They said, here's what happened. And when Krishna told what happened, they thought, oh, right. You should have seen Krishna, he was crawling on his hands and legs, pulling this mortar behind him, and it got wedged between the two trees. The two trees fell over, and these two effulgent beings came before little Krishna with palms handed, palms folded, started offering some words we couldn't understand. And then they went away. Right. Right. Okay. Okay, it's time for prasadam. Let's go. They didn't take the children seriously because they can't see Krishna as worshipable. Just like when Nanda Maharaj was kidnapped by the agents of Varuna because he was breaking Ekadasi fast on the Dwadasi day by their calculation at the wrong time, taking his bath in the Jamuna. And so they came and kidnapped him and took him to Varuna's abode. So Krishna and Balaram went to rescue Nanda Maharaj, and they went to Varuna's abode, and Varuna was worshipping Krishna right in front of Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj was wondering, what's going on? This is my little boy. And the son of Vasudeva and Rohini. Varuna's worshipping them. It just didn't fit the affection. Krishna can go to the abode of Varuna, okay, but Varuna worshipping him. So when he got back to his palace up here, he was asking the elders, brought together a group of elders, this is what happened. Let me tell you. Here's the story. Now, who do you think my son is, anyway? You're all wise elders in the village. Tell me what you think. Maybe he's a great yogi. Maybe he's a mystic. Maybe he's a demigod. We don't know. Finally, Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj concluded, it must be that Lord Narayan protected Krishna. Some pious activities that we have done, some benefit has gone to Krishna. Krishna was protected. This is not a safe place here in Gokul. I think we should leave. Let us go back to our ancestral place. So, at that age of... I think it's 6 years and some number of months, they left Gokul. Too many demons, too much troubles over here. And they left. So we'll describe some more of Krishna's Gokul pastimes at the next place that we're going to and have lunch. Shri Krishna Balaram ki, Shri Radha Damodar ki, Gaur Prema Nandi Bol.